Welcome to the Rooted Youth Ministry Podcast, which aims to advance gospel-centered youth ministry by equipping and empowering youth ministers and parents to faithfully disciple students towards lifelong faith in Jesus Christ. The Rooted Youth Ministry Podcast is part of the Rooted family of podcasts, which also includes the Rooted Parent Podcast, Ask Alice, and Thanos to Theos. To learn more about Rooted, visit www.rootedministry.com. I'm your host, Davis Lacey. We are recording live from TGC 21 in Indianapolis, Indiana. You'll have to excuse some of the background voices that we hear. Turns out when you get a lot of people together and talk about Jesus and the first time in the flesh for some of us in 12 months or more, people get pretty excited about it. And a guy who knows well the excitement is my guest today on the Rooted Youth Ministry Podcast, Brett McCracken. Brett, welcome.
Thanks so much, Davis. Thanks
for
having me.
How are you doing? You have been in Indianapolis for this conference for quite some time. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been here since Friday for the women's conference, which we just finished yesterday, and now moving on to another conference. So two conferences back to back.
Awesome.
It's ambitious, but it's been fun.
Yep. Somebody, I can't remember if it was one of our conferences or if it was at TGC a couple years ago. Somebody's like, I love Rooted because y'all always bite off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
And sometimes you pull it off.
Yeah.
TGC pulls it off well. Y'all have hosted us so well for our time. Thank you for the work that you've done in that.
Good.
If you're not familiar with Brett, he is the senior editor and director of communications at the Gospel Coalition. He's the author of The Wisdom Pyramid, Feeding Your Soul in a Post-Truth World, Uncomfortable, The Awkward and Essential Challenge of Christian Community, Gray Matters, Navigating the Space Between Legalism and Liberty, and Hipster Christianity, When Church and Cool Collide. Brett and his wife, Kira, did I say that correctly?
Yep.
All right. Should have checked that before the podcast, but we're doing
right.
It live. They live in Santa Ana, California with their two sons. They belong to Southlands Church, where Brett serves as an elder. Brother, thank you so much for carving out time in your busy schedule to join us.
Of course.
And I'd love to talk about your newly released book, The Wisdom Pyramid. And you open that book by saying, our world has more and more information, but less and less wisdom. What do you mean by that, and why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, you know, we do live in a time in history where information access has never been easier. We have at our fingertips, like pull out your smartphone, you have access to the entire accumulated knowledge of humankind, really. I mean, it's crazy. It's mind-boggling how much information we have access to, but I don't think that you would look around at today's world, the information age, and say that it's the wisest generation of humans ever. You know, like, it doesn't seem like there's a correlation between more information and more wisdom. And if anything, there's a negative correlation, meaning the more information we seem to be having, the less wisdom we actually have.
That makes sense.
So what this book is really exploring is, you know, why is that the case? What are the information dynamics that are making it harder, actually, to be wise? And then what do we do in light of that? How do we gain wisdom and become wise at a time in history where we really need wisdom more than ever? Because it's just, we're bombarded with so many voices and perspectives and information, and so much of it is not helpful, and, you know, so much of it is false. Some of it is true, but how do we tell the difference?
Yeah.
And wisdom is, you know, it's the ability to do that, to discern. We need more wisdom, and yet we're in a moment where it's like harder than ever to get it. So.
Sure. Makes sense. I agree with the premise. And in the book, you talk about three different sources of sickness that sort of in your view, in your estimation, make the world more unwise. What are those three sources, and why did you pick those three as these are the primary sources of wisdom sickness?
Yeah. So the three are too much information, too fast, so the speed of information, and then too oriented around the individual. So it's kind of like all three have corollaries to eating, right? Like if you eat too much, you're going to get sick. If you eat too fast, that's not also going to be very good for your health. Fast food isn't generally, you know, great for you. And then if you only eat what you like if you only ever eat your favorite food, or if you only eat what looks good to you, that can be unhealthy too. So all of that can be applied to wisdom and information. So we live in a world of total information gluttony, right? We're overloaded with information, and many of us just are going back for more, right? We go back to the buffet line and just fill up our plate, so to speak, with more and more information, and we're just binging on it, and it's making us sick. And there's lots of ways that that's making us sick. One of the specific ways I talk about in the book is that our brains are actually being so bombarded with information coming at them constantly, all day, every day in the digital age, that they're spending all this energy on triage, like constantly having to discern, is this information that I need to file away? Is this trivial information that I can just discard? And because their brains are spending all their time playing triage, there's no energy left to spend on the deeper level thinking and critical evaluation, which we know is essential for wisdom.
Sure.
So that's the too much problem, the too fast problem. There's a lot I could say about that. But, you know, anyone who has, like, tweeted something sooner than they should have knows what I'm getting at here, right?
Yes.
The speed with which we're beckoned to opine, to sound off, is so detrimental to everyone, including our own kind of witness a lot of times. But also the way information is transmitted by the media, it's just problematic because the incentives in the digital age for profit are speed. Like, whoever can be the first to break news wins. They get the most views, they get the most eyeballs. Whoever is the quickest to, like, get some talking head expert to, like, give their opinion about whatever is happening in the news, whatever shooting just happened somewhere in the world, like, this instant reaction, instant commentary, breaking news orientation of information is so counterproductive a lot of times. And then the third one, the orientation of information around the individual, is problematic because it just adds to an existing kind of philosophical orientation that over the last few centuries we've been on this slow move inward in terms of, it used to be that humans mainly looked for truth outside of themselves. There was something transcendent that was the source of truth. And over the course of many centuries, really, we've moved to, in the West at least, to a very, like, look within yourself. Like, each individual is the measure of truth. And now technology, the algorithms just kind of perpetuate that because literally your experience of reality through your smartphone, through your feeds, is curated to you. And so you really are the center of the universe. And if you don't like something, you can opt out, you can unfollow. And so we just have these echo chambers where everyone is just in their own little bubble of reality. And it's no wonder we're more foolish than ever because
we're just
in these interior kind of insular bubbles.
Sure. You know, it's interesting to think through the fact that, you know, the joke on the Rooted team is that I'm 12 years old because I'm like the youngest member on the team, and it is what it is. But even someone as young as me can remember when social media was non-existent. It was a non-player in the scheme of the world. But for the students that we're shepherding in our churches and in our homes, that's not really been the case for them. They have always grown up in a social media world. So as you think about these three sources of sickness, too much, too fast, and too centered around you. Did I get those right?
Yeah.
Okay. As we think about those, I mean, obviously those impact all of us, but I feel like there's probably a unique or maybe even disproportionate impact that it has on teenagers. Is that the case? Can you help us understand as youth ministry leaders how some of these sources of sickness really disproportionately impact our young people?
Yeah, it's scary to think about because I'm like you. Like, I can remember a time before social media, so I know that I haven't been as formed in this environment as Gen Z has, and yet I experience the effects very profoundly. And so if I'm experiencing the ill effects of this so much, then I can't imagine what it's like for Gen Z. So for digital natives, they've grown up in a world where their experience of the world largely is through their device. And there's, you know, all sorts of interesting books that have come out. iGen, I'm sure you're familiar with that book, that talks about how the smartphone has given rise to just spikes in mental illness and all these anxiety, these problems which you can totally understand for a generation raised on the smartphone and this kind of weird feedback loop of needing affirmation and, you know, is my photo getting enough likes?
Yes.
And, you know, what are people thinking and saying about me? So it's, yeah, I think about it a lot. I have kids now. I'm a young dad and they're, you know, they're too young to have phones, and I hope they don't get phones for a long time. But I do, yeah, just think about what is the world going to be like for them with their technology and all these sorts of these things that are making me sick and, you know, Gen Z is sick. Like, wow, how much more toxic is that going to be for the next generation coming up? So I wrote the book like largely as a parent, as a dad, like wanting to produce a resource that could offer some sort of way out of this and some sort of healthier framework to just look at the world through, you know, not just your phone, but through this lens of
like
all these better sources of wisdom and truth and beauty rather than just what's happening on Instagram or TikTok or whatever.
Sure, yeah. I love that heart, and it's a great segue into the next question I want to ask you, which is, man, what are some of the pieces of wisdom, the tools that will help us navigate towards wisdom, away from wisdom deficiency or wisdom sickness? Like if a youth worker reads your book and puts some of the things into practice, what are going to be some of the big takeaways that will help us shepherd young people towards wisdom?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one thing I say is that with technology and with phones, it's not enough to just talk about how bad it is and how like potentially damaging it is. Like, I don't think young people are going to hear that. Like, it's going to just kind of fall on deaf ears. So what I wanted this book to be was not just a like railing against technology and all of its ill effects, but what's the alternative? Because if you ask people to spend less time scrolling on their smartphones, then what do they fill that with?
Yes.
Like, what are the more nourishing, life-giving things they can do? So that's what I was trying to give with the Wisdom Pyramid as guidance for, here are some like time-tested, proven, solid places where humans for millennia have found wisdom and grown healthier. And so if we can steer young people towards those kind of older, proven places of health and just introduce them in a fresh way, you know, introduce the church in a fresh way, introduce reading books and beauty and the arts and nature. We can get into the levels of the pyramid if you want later. But so, yeah, I think having a more positive vision, not just a negative vision, is important with discipling the next generation. And then when it comes to how we use technology and social media and the phone, one thing I really focus on in the book is just the importance of intentionality and never being a passive digital wanderer, I call it.
Okay.
Which I think is really probably the dominant mode that most of us use our smartphones. We just kind of pick it out of our pocket when we have 5 minutes to spare and we just start scrolling. And that's what every Gen Z kid out there with a smartphone, that's what they do. They're waiting in line for Starbucks and they pull out their phone and they just start scrolling.
Sure.
And that's what I think is really problematic, is when you're just passive, because then you're totally at the mercy of the algorithms. You're really just letting yourself be taken wherever the algorithms of these social media companies want you to go. And that's never, like, little good comes of that. I suppose some good could come of it. You could stumble across a really great Netflix show that way. I don't know. And it could bless your life. But most of the time, what's happening there is these social media companies just want your eyeballs. They want you to be on their platform, and they don't care what you do. They just have figured out how to keep us on there. And sadly, a lot of us are just at the mercy of them. We can't help ourselves. We can't stop our hand from grabbing our phone when we have those 3 minutes of a break between activities. So that's like one small thing I would challenge, you know, parents and youth leaders to challenge young people with. Like, try to like break yourself of that Pavlovian habit of just reaching for your phone and passively starting to scroll.
Mm.
It's okay to go online, but go online with a purpose. Like,
good.
Go online because there's one article or one show you know you want to watch, or go on social media because there's a great quote or something you want to share and to bless people. Like, go for a reason and stay only as long as you need to.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. All right, you brought it up. I think it's helpful. Is the wisdom pyramid based sort of on the food pyramid? Like, that's a metaphor in terms of diet that seems like it's coming out. Okay.
Yep.
So there's I'm guessing, bigger layers at the bottom that you're supposed to be sort of your baseline foundational consumption of wisdom sources, and then it works its way up the top. Walk us through the pyramid, if you will, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so the parallel with the food pyramid, I think is appropriate because just like with eating food, right, you are healthy physically or unhealthy based on your diet.
Sure.
Like, what you take in makes you healthier or unhealthier. And the same is true of our spiritual health, right? What we take in terms of ideas, voices, information, it can shape us for good or for ill. And so I would argue that in large part our spiritual malaise, our spiritual sickness in the Western world today is because we're letting a lot of unhelpful voices constantly feed our soul. Our diet is imbalanced, to say the least. So the food pyramid was about a better, more balanced diet. Like, here are the more nutritious food groups that you should base your diet on, and here are the less so. You know, what the dessert category is in the top of the food pyramid.
That's right.
Use sparingly. Mm. So the wisdom
pyramid. I love the use sparingly category.
Use sparingly, right? It's good every now and then, but use sparingly. So for the wisdom pyramid, I knew that I wanted the internet and social media to be in that use sparingly category. So I think most of us would probably have to say that we've made the internet and social media that foundation. It probably does occupy the dominant category in terms of what's feeding us information, and that's what's making us sick. So if it's in its proper place, however, in the kind of dessert category where it's not our main source, then it can be helpful and it can be fine. But like anything in life, it's too much of it. Too much of a good thing becomes a bad thing. And the internet is, you know, only tenuously a good thing.
Sure.
You know? Sure. Hard to call it a good thing, but
sure,
it can be good. So yeah, some of the other levels of the pyramids, the base level of the wisdom pyramid is the Bible, obviously. So
good.
If we have, as Christians, believe the Bible is God's word, or it's his kind of revelation to us, it's the only infallible source we have. And man, we need that. Like, we need something in this world that is beyond question.
Amen.
That is beyond subjectivity, that is not subject to our fickle, you know, opinions and changing moods and whatever the cultural zeitgeist is. So what a gift that we have that foundation, that Amen. We have the Bible. And I think that we just have to re-enchant ourselves to that. Like, Christians who have grown up in a Christian home, I think, can take the Bible for granted. But once you start to think about, like, what would life be like for someone who didn't have a foundation that was beyond subjectivity, like, then literally everything in life is unknowable, because how could you ever know that anything is true unless you have a foundation against which you can check the relative merits of something? So yeah, having the pyramid be foundationed by the Bible is so critical, because it lets all the other categories of knowledge flourish. Because once you have the Bible giving you that sturdy foundation, I think it frees you up to be able to experience things like, I have a category of books, and I have a category of beauty, which is like the arts. And I think those categories, those areas, can be sort of iffy as sources of truth if you don't have a solid foundation. But if you do, then it frees you up to, like, you know, really, like, explore books in the arts, even by non-Christian artists or non-Christian authors, because you can read those books and you can identify from a biblical standpoint, oh, okay, this is consistent, or this doesn't contradict scripture, so I can glean something from that.
It's good.
But this doesn't, and I know that because I have the infallible word of God as the judge, and so I can discard that and glean that. And so I think Christians can pursue truth in all sorts of places in the world more effectively and more freely because of the Bible as the foundation.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Man, this has been so helpful. I think that many of our listeners will find this book and what you're talking about very helpful in the context of their ministries as they're serving students. But at Rooted, one of our core values is also partnering with parents. So in youth ministry, not trying to replace the role of the parents, not trying to supplant the role of the parents, but to come alongside and champion and support and edify and encourage parents in the discipleship of the young people in their homes. So we love that. And part of what that looks like is for us as youth ministry leaders to be almost like interpreters of teen culture to our parents, of helping them really understand what's going on and what to make sense of it. And I think that as you're talking, so many of us would say, yes, that makes sense. Yes, I see that in my students' lives. But I just can't get to seeing their parents to see this, or I have a hard time translating this to them, right? How can we come alongside of parents in this way and not just say, be wise, but also here's some things that you could be doing to help your kids grow in wisdom?
Yeah, I love that question. And as I wrote this book, I just imagined it being a family experience. Like, even with my own kids, they're little, like, so they can't enter into this idea very much, but we try to live the wisdom pyramid in our house, in our little family unit. We try to build our weekly rhythms around these sources. So the Bible, it's a daily morning thing. I try to make that a rhythm in my household with my kids. Church, of course, something we go to as a family every week. Nature, like, that's the third most important level in my wisdom pyramid. And we as a family love nature, and we go out on walks and go to the beach. We live in Southern California, which is amazing. And so we're out in God's creation as a family, and beauty, you know, art, and like all these things, books, you know, I read my son's books all the time, trying to instill in them that habit of reading. So I think any family can take the general kind of idea of the wisdom pyramid and find creative ways to implement it, because that makes this whole digital discipleship idea just more fun. Like, it becomes less about like hours of screen time allowed, which I think is for many families kind of the dominant way of discipling in this area of media, which I think is important, and we should have boundaries in place on that. But it goes beyond that and starts to like introduce them, like, look, there's so much more in God's world for you and for us to grow us and to just to be really in awe of. So let's do this together, and let's find fun ways to practice this. And it's not to say there's never time where watching a show on your phone or, like, you know, being on social media is fine, but I think we need to give ideas and kind of model ways to fill our lives with more nourishing habits and sources of wisdom rather than just all being on our phones, right? You don't want to be that family where you're at the dinner table and all of you are on your devices, right? Nothing is more depressing than seeing that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good. Brother, thank you so much for this. I've really enjoyed getting to know you and your father's heart for your kids and how that's such a big part of this. And I think that makes it all the more applicable for our listeners here at Rooted, that this is a resource that was largely written with families and with young people in mind.
Yeah.
So thank you, my friend. Where, if our listeners want to find more about you and more about your ministry, where can they go?
The Gospel Coalition is where I do most of my writing. So, if you're Gospel Coalition fans, hopefully you've read some of my articles, and that's where I'm writing largely about culture. That's kind of my niche area, writing about movies and, TV and music
I watched The Tree of Life based on your recommendation.
Oh, did you?
So,
good.
Yep,
well,
yep.
I've written a lot about that movie, so I'm a big fan. And then I have a website, brettmccracken.com, which is where you can learn about all of my books and other stuff. So, yeah.
Awesome. Last question I've got for you. We've talked a lot about a book that you have released. Let's talk just a little bit about an upcoming book that Rooted will be releasing this fall called The Jesus I Wish I Knew in High School, written directly to teenagers from folks that are a few steps down the road saying, this is what I knew about Jesus and how this would have helped me in high school. So, Brett McCracken, here and now. If you could go back in time and teach yourself, high school Brett, one thing that you know now about the Lord, what would that one thing be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was thinking about that, just trying to go down memory lane. You know, high school was a long time ago. I'm not super old, but old enough that high school is a while ago. But one thing I remember as a Christian, I grew up as a Christian, and in high school, I was kind of the nerdy, like, intellectually oriented kid, like, kind of the annoying youth group kid who was always asking the youth pastor like hard questions about the Bible. And
I don't know anything about that.
You don't know anything
about
experience.
That. No.
Right. And so I think what I would, and I had kind of this cocky, like, attitude that, like, oh, like, the church, Christianity is kind of anti-intellectual, and, like, that if I want to really pursue this in my life, like, the intellectual path, which I did, that I have to do it kind of outside of the church or, like, whatever. And I've learned since, and by God's grace, it happened pretty soon after I left high school and I went to Wheaton College, which was a really great place for me to kind of bridge these worlds of the intellect and faith. But I would tell myself, like, no, like, there's no reason why you can't be a faithful Christian and a curious, intellectually oriented person who asks questions about a lot of things and who has doubts about a lot of things. Like, Jesus is the truth, and Jesus said the truth will set you free. And so the truth of Christianity, like I said earlier, with the Bible, like, having truth that's ironclad, that's firm, that's infallible, really should allow Christians to be the most curious, the most intellectually. We should be the ones, like, in science, like, doing science experiments, like, exploring the world with the most passion, because we know that, like, it's a freeing thing to have the foundation of the Bible and the truth of Jesus, which sets us free. So, yeah, that's something I've learned, and I hope young people learn sooner than later, because it always grieves my heart to see young people leave the faith for that reason, who they think this isn't a place where I can be intellectually vibrant, and I have to somehow check my brain at the door in order to be a Christian, and I'm not interested in that. It's so not the case, and I would challenge churches, if that's the type of environment that your students are picking up, that it's not a good place for a smart, intellectual kid, then maybe you need to make some adjustments as a church, because we never want to turn young people off of the faith because there's some sort of impression that it's you have to just kind of blindly approach it and check your brain at the door. It's just not true.
That's good. Great encouragement. Thanks for letting us travel with you down memory lane. And y'all, thanks for listening to this episode of the Rooted Youth Ministry Podcast with our guest, Brett McCracken. If you found this podcast helpful or encouraging, we'd appreciate your help in bringing this grace-filled, gospel-centered, Bible-saturated content to others who might also benefit from it. Help us serve others by sharing this resource on social media, by leaving 5-star feedback, or simply by subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more grace-filled, gospel-centered, Bible-saturated resources, be sure to visit www.rootedministry.com. As always, we give a special thanks to High Street Hymns for providing the music on this podcast. On behalf of all of us here at Rooted, my name's Davis Lacey. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rooted Youth Ministry Podcast.